I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. It is February 20th, 2024. Representative Heinzman, would you like to move the minutes for February 14th?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the minutes.
Representative Heinzman moves the minutes for February 14th, 2024. Any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Members, we have a very full agenda today. We're going to start with Representative Hemmingson-Yeager on House File 3326. This relates to the environment mercury-containing lighting ban, and we have a couple testifiers. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, I'm going to move that House File 3326 be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Thank you.
And I believe you have an author's amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I will move the A24-0204 author's amendment. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, could you describe the amendment?
Yes. Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to talk about this bill. The A24 really just kind of adds in some language to add mercury vapor lamps to the definitions and to the type of lamps that we're looking to phase out. And then it also, based on some feedback from a stakeholder, talks about replacement lamps in motor vehicles that were manufactured before January 1st of 2020. Long and short of it.
Members, do you have any questions for the A24-0204 amendment? Author would like to get the bill in the shape they would like. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. To House File 3326 as amended. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Thanks again. Hello again, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager. Again, thanks for the time to talk about this. It'll phase out the, what this aims to do is to phase out the sale of mercury-containing fluorescent light bulbs. As we know, mercury is a very well-known toxin. It's a heavy metal, not unlike lead. It's dangerous, especially for kids and pregnant people. Minnesota also has a history of taking mercury very seriously. In 1993, we were the first to enact a mercury lamp disposal ban and require recycling of all mercury-containing lamps. And then in 2007, we became the first state to ban mercury in cosmetics and skin lightening creams. So the next step is to make our homes, businesses, and other places safe from mercury. Many stores still sell these very fragile glass tubes, fluorescent light bulbs, that when they break, they emit a toxic mercury vapor. But what's exciting is that we already have cost comparable, more efficient, and energy alternatives available. Consumers and businesses have thousands of readily available LED alternatives for these fluorescent lamps. And the LEDs are more cost effective, they last longer, and they're already providing mercury-free lighting in our homes, schools, houses of worship, and places of work. And I will just kind of add that my husband and I were able to very easily take out our old mercury bulbs and put in LED bulbs just as easily as replacing a regular light bulb, and the cost was pretty much the same at where we went to go shopping. This bill does also recognize that there are some specialty applications and exempts those from this bill. So that includes like photocopying, film and video production, and when they're needed for germicidal use, among other applications. I've been really pleased to work with a diverse group of stakeholders on this, including waste haulers who don't want exposure to these toxic vapors when they're taking care of light bulbs in the trash, environmental groups who are working to protect our air and water, energy advocates to support energy savings and carbon reductions for more efficient lighting, and then consumer advocates who are just looking for longer lasting, more cost effective ways to light their homes. And with that, I look forward to our testifier and our following discussion.
And we have two testifiers on the list, or one?
I believe just one today. Our second one had to be over at the Senate.
Okay. Welcome Eric Fowler with Fresh Energy. If you could introduce yourself for the record.
Yeah, thank you very much. My name is Eric Fowler. My pronouns are he, him, his. I am on the buildings team at Fresh Energy. Thank you very much to members and to the chair for the opportunity to comment on this bill. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan Minnesota-based clean energy policy nonprofit dedicated to advancing the clean energy economy And I'm grateful to testify in favor of HF 3326, which will make lighting safer and more efficient. So fluorescent lights are unnecessarily dangerous and wasteful at this point. There is no such thing as a mercury-free fluorescent light. And as we've heard, the LED alternatives are, they're mercury-free, they use half the energy, and they save consumers and businesses on their electric bills, on carbon emissions, and they reduce peak lighting demand on the electric grid. In 2022, the National Appliance Standards Awareness Project published research into the availability and the cost-effectiveness of LED alternatives to fluorescent light bulbs. And they found that extensive alternatives are available and that the most common fluorescent bulb, a 4-foot T8, costs on average 11 cents more as an LED versus a fluorescent. And that cost is recovered within a month due to the electricity savings. So this is common sense policy that has already been adopted in Vermont, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Rhode Island, and Maine. And I hope that we will join them in saying farewell to mercury-based lighting. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone else? Members, are there any questions? Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a reoccurring theme in this committee, but I'm just going to have to ask anyway, just to confirm. I don't know that it was addressed. Not to be redundant, though, considering potential federal legislation, is there anything moving? Is this going to potentially be in conflict with that if there is any movement on this federally that we're aware of?
I'm not aware of any. I'm going to look at my testifier.
Mr. Fowler.
Yeah, thank you. There is movement around efficiency standards. As far as I know, there is movement at the federal level. This does not conflict in any way that I am aware of with those standards. The main progress there at the federal level that I'm aware of has more impact on the lumens per watt versus looking at the fact that a particular product is mercury containing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard you point out that there's no conflict necessarily. That's good. How about the other side of the coin, which is, would this be redundant? Is this necessary to move this legislation here in Minnesota? Just wanting to confirm that there isn't already something happening at the federal level. And then if we can do two things at one time, I'd also be curious if there's any potential opportunity, maybe this question is for the bill author, to potentially look at moving to 2026 as an implementation on both of the dates that are mentioned in here in terms of compliance.
Representative Hampton-Yeager.
So to the second point, I believe we have 2025 mostly for homes, and this is something where it's just going to be kind of a natural progression of phasing out. So as your light bulb burns out, you'll just basically purchase an LED instead of a fluorescent. And then I think 2026 is more for like the business scale. Happy to talk with you more on like why we might want to push them both out, but as of right now, I'm comfortable keeping the 25 and the 26. As far as the federal agreement and everything, again, I would like to pass the buck over to Eric.
Mr. Fowler.
Yeah, thank you. The current state is that there are a lot of fluorescents on the shelves in the rest of the country. I think even if we did look at progress on something like this, the timeline could be quite extended. And in the meantime, one good reason for adopting this policy along with these other states is to make sure that Minnesota does not end up as a place, as a destination for mercury-containing bulbs that are no longer able to be sold in other jurisdictions.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just a quick comment. I'm one of those that's going through the process of trying to find an alternative that's more energy efficient. I'm going through my shop right now and finding a replacement. It was more complicated than I expected to simply go from a ballast-based mercury vapor light, which wasn't that long ago. We're all being told this is the new way, you have to do this. And now I guess we're rounding that bend and we're on to the next thing and potentially another mandate. My only, I guess, concern, again, with the date is people tend to see these things in the news, see them coming, and when 2025, which is right around the corner, is front and center in a news story, what do people do? They stock up because they don't want to have to go through the process maybe that I'm going through, replacing ballast, going through all the light fixtures, hiring an electrician potentially. There's a lot more going on there, no matter whether you're a commercial operation or just an individual. And given maybe a little more time, I think that the market and the needs of consumers are going to align on this issue more easily. So that's just my two thoughts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Hamilton-Yeager, any final closing comments?
Thank you, Representative Heisman, for discussing that with me. Appreciate it. I guess I would just like to say, again, thank you. Growing up, and what I've been noticing is that Minnesota doesn't wait. When we see that there's an environmental issue that we need to confront, people in my district, people across Minnesota, like, we want to take care of our environment. We want to take care of our air, our land, and water. So, you know, I'm very excited that we're taking this seriously and looking ahead at what other fix we can do to not only go towards our climate goals, but to increase the health of our communities too. So thank you.
I would renew my motion that House File 3326, as amended, be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. Ayes have it. Motion is adopted. Congratulations. Next up, I'm going to hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Jordan.
Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill, House File 3368?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd move that House File 3368 be referred to the General Register.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you. Members, you may remember last year we repaid a fund that had been raided about 20 years ago, the Metropolitan Landfill Trust, and we also had discussions about the closed landfill. And previously, when there have been budget crises, these trust funds have been raided to balance the budget. And so what House File 3368 is an attempt to have a lockbox on these funds so that the local governments that are affected in those areas where the landfills are, be they the closed landfill in Greater Minnesota or the Metropolitan Landfill, they would have to approve that. So it's a fairly simple bill. I have one testifier that I know of, and you can read through the bill. It requires local approval for both the CLIF, the Closed Landfill Investment Fund, and the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. For testifiers, I have Nikki Stewart from Dakota County. As you come approach the testifier's chair, if you can state your name and title and then proceed with your testimony.
I'm Nikki Stewart, Environmental Resources Director at Dakota County. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to House File 3368. Once a landfill closes, it must be monitored and maintained for decades to ensure that it does not negatively impact people or the environment, and long-term care of landfills can be costly. The state set up the Closed Landfill Investment Fund, or CLIF, and the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust, or MLCAT, to ensure funds will be available for future monitoring and remediation of closed landfills. CLIF is an investment from 1999 intended to grow in interest to accommodate long-term care costs of landfills statewide, currently now at 112 in the program, with two more pending. Dakota County has three closed landfills in this program, one of which is the largest by acreage, the Freeway Landfill and Dump. The MILCAT is funded by landfill fees and from the two active landfills in Dakota County, Pine Bend Republic and Burnsville Waste Management. These two landfills are the only ones paying into MILCAT, and yet funds are available to eligible landfills in the entire metro. A total of three of the seven eligible landfills in MILCAT are in Dakota County. While MILCAT has been fully replenished thanks to last year's legislature, as the representative has stated, the CLIF has not been fully repaid, with funds used to balance the state's general fund in the past. Specific to CLIF, 2023 estimates showed over $300 million in care over the next 30 years would be needed in CLIF. The Freeway Landfill and Dump alone is estimated to have cleanup costs ranging from $117 million to $538 million, depending on the management method chosen by the legislature. This bill would provide for ensuring no additional funds are transferred out of CLIF or MILCAT for purposes not related to the intent of the statute. This would also allow for counties to voice concerns on any future impacts to funding. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? We'll go to questions. First on my list is Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair. Quick question. Is there any known opposition to this bill?
Director Stewart.
Sorry, Chair and Representative, not that I know of at this time.
Representative Gilman?
That's my only question. Thanks.
Further questions from members? Representative Hansen, any closing comments?
I'd ask for your support. You know, this is to look for future legislatures. If we run into bumpy times, we at least have these protections where the local affected communities can engage. So I'd ask for you to support House File 3368 and renew my motion.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 3368 be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails. With that, I will pass the gavel back to Chair Hansen while we switch seats.
Next up is House File 3577, Packaging Waste Cost Reduction Act Established and Rulemaking Authorized. Representative Jordan, would you like to move your bill?
So move, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move that House File 3577 be referred to the Commerce Committee, not Department.
Representative Jordan moves that House File 3577 be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Jordan, I believe you have the DE1 author's amendment. Would you like to move that amendment?
So move, Mr. Chair.
And could you explain it?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The vast majority of the DE is technical. A lot of it comes from all the folks that have interest in this bill. So thank you to all of our Minnesota counties, Eureka Recycling, Clean Water Action, the Environmental Justice Table, Mankato Zero Waste, Waste Management, Republic Services, Waste Management's on there twice, the MPCA, and so many others for all their edits that went into this DE, and thank you to Mr. Bob Eliff for your help in drafting it. Some highlights of the bill include some non-disclosure agreements, an auditor established to protect the data. There's some work on how many pros we would eventually be establishing. There were some adjustments to service provider agreements and reimbursement rates. And there were some limits to when and if producers and the pro can own infrastructure. I ask for member support to get the bill in the shape that it should be to be discussed.
Are there any questions to the DE1 amendment? You all would like to get the bill in the shape they would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The DE1 is adopted. Representative Jordan, to House File 3577 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I will try to be brief but explain the bill. I know there are many people here who will also help explain the bill and provide some feedback on it. But members, essentially, as we were just discussing, as you all know, we have a waste problem in Minnesota. And 40% of that waste comes from packaging. That's anticipated to grow as we have more and more of deliveries and e-commerce coming. Packaging will continue to grow and will continue to be part of our waste that ultimately ends up in our landfills and in our trash incinerators. And currently, the people who are responsible for the costs and the stress of that are all of us. We're the ones who are paying taxes into our local governments to deal with our tax problem or to deal with our waste problem. And we pay fees for that. And so right now, we're the ones that are bearing the burden for that packaging end of life. And then there's also a public health concern, as we've heard about extensively in this committee, as we've talked about environmental justice, that our landfills and our trash incinerators are bad for us. Chair Lee and I represent communities that are burdened by a trash incinerator. As many of you know, I've struggled with asthma myself, and so do our constituents. That is not helped by burning trash that can be recycled and turned into other products. Landfills have runoff and generate microplastics that end up in our soil and water and ultimately end up in us. We are also exacerbating climate change as we are creating new materials instead of using the ones that could be recycled. We are needing to use resources to deal with that, and we're also creating emissions that are going into our planet as we continue to deal with this. And we ultimately are the ones who bear the costs as taxpayers for all of those problems. And the solution is this bill. We need to both generate less waste and deal more efficiently with the waste that we are generating. And this bill does both. There are extensive goals on page 23 of the DE. I recommend you all take a look for the sake of time, and I know there are many testifiers who are going to comment on the goals. I won't go through them. But ultimately, it is the producers of the products themselves that should pay for this. They're the ones who are both responsible and have the solution to be responsible for both the products themselves and the end use. And they would be held accountable in this bill by the MPCA. There is extensive testimony in packets and via testimony, as you're about to hear. And so rather than walking through the bill section by section and line by line, I'm instead going to go through a timeline about how this bill deals with our waste. And it starts with here. This is the first hearing, so we start today. But should this law go into effect, January 1st of next year, 2025, is when we will establish a producer responsibility organization, which I will now call a PRO, that's also defined in the bill. It also establishes an advisory board. The membership can be found starting on page 9 of the DE. And our brands need to start registering with the PRO, and we'll do this annually. On March 1st of 2025, our advisory board will have had its first meeting. By October 1st, the commissioner will be working with the advisory board and notifying brands of the fee. This is annual until the first stewardship plan is enacted. And brands have 45 days to remit payments. Details for how the fee is assessed start on lines 25.7 of the DE. By the end of December 31st, 2026, our first needs assessment will be completed. And the needs assessment can be found on page 15.17, and the needs assessment for our trash will be updated every 5 years. And this is the baseline for determining when we have reached our recycling goals. Some highlights on what the needs assessment will contain is our current reuse, recycling, and compost rates aggregated by material. It will have performance targets to meet goals. It will have an assessment of current infrastructure and our future needs for infrastructure. So those could include infrastructure needs to meet those recycling and compost goals. There is an assessment of end markets in Minnesota for those recycled goods, so things that we're turning our waste into. It will have an analysis of toxics in our waste and recycling and the needs around that. And there will be public education resources, so all of our wonderful constituents will know how the state is dealing with their waste and what needs to be done to ensure that we can continue to do so efficiently. by March 1st of 2027, the MPCA will provide a list of covered materials that are considered recyclable or compostable, and that is repeated every 3 years. A year later, on March 1st, the PRO will submit its first operation or stewardship plan as determined by the needs assessment. That stewardship plan will be redone every 5 years after that. There will also be an amendment process that is started by the brands that can provide their input on how that stewardship plan could, or what they would like to see in that stewardship plan. And so the content, just so you know, the content of stewardship plans start on lines 18.28 of the DE. Some highlights include performance targets aggregated by material, so glass, plastic, etc. The collection methods, details on how the PRO is measuring that content, the producer fees, investment proposals for infrastructure, and then responsible end markets. We need to make sure that we're dealing with our trash and we're dealing with it responsibly. By October 1st of 2028, the PRO will notify registered producers of their responsibilities and their fee for the following year to run the PRO, and that will happen annually after that. By January 1st of 2029, producers must register with the PRO to do business in Minnesota. By July 1st of 2031, our first PRO report will be submitted to the MPCA and will be submitted annually after that. And then by January 1st of 2032, all packaging in Minnesota must be reusable, recyclable, or compostable. That's the roadmap for this bill. I'm ready for testimony, Mr. Chair. Once testimony is over, I'm happy to stand for questions, and I will also have Mallory Anderson here to help answer technical questions as they arise.
So, members in the audience, we have a large number of testifiers. We are going to be alternating between pro and con throughout the presentation. So, first up, we have Victoria Reinhart, Chair of the Partnership on Waste and Energy, Ramsey County Commissioner. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. I am Victoria Reinhart, Ramsey County Commissioner, and I do serve as Chair of the Partnership on Waste and Energy. It's a collaboration of Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington counties. I want to thank Representative Jordan for her leadership in caring and advocating for this bill. And I thank you, Chair Hansen, for scheduling this hearing. I am pleased to be here today to testify and to talk about House File 3577, the Packaging, Waste, and Cost Reduction Act. It is so important to counties. Minnesota's current recycling system is one of the best in the country. Counties are working very hard with our cities, recyclers, residents, and businesses to keep as much waste out of landfills as possible. Even with all this, our recycling rates have been stuck at around 40% for many years. Landfills are being filled with mountains of trash from the hundreds of thousands of tons of valuable recyclables each year that our recycling systems are not yet capturing. In the metro area alone, the amount of waste generated is projected to grow by 19% over the next two decades. 19% growth. We need to get the state out of the business as usual and get us to the next level to meet state recycling mandates and our zero waste ambitions. The Packaging, Waste, and Cost Reduction Act brings packaging and paper product producers to the table. They will have skin in the game to help fix the waste problem they've created. Cost reduction is in the name of the act because producer resources will reduce the financial burden on counties, cities, and taxpayers for recycling programs. This act calls for producers to bring solutions to improve our state system and reach our environmental goals, which is the most important here. Building on the state's recycling, collection, and processing infrastructure with producers, not taxpayers, funding the gaps where we are losing recyclables now. These are just a few of the reasons this act is so important to counties. I respectfully ask that members of the committee approve House File 3577 and put Minnesota on a path to greater success in waste reduction, reuse, recycling, and composting. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Jordan, and members for your time, and I am happy to answer any questions.
We will take questions at the end. Tony Quillis, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to make a couple of comments on House File 3577. As you heard Commissioner Reinhart mention, Minnesota is one of the national leaders in recycling efforts. We have a robust recycling infrastructure here and some of the highest recycling rates, and depending on what publications you look at and how you put together the numbers, we range anywhere from 9th to 12th in the nation. But we're different than other states also when you look at recycling, because we have a solid waste tax that was established here in 1997. Each of us on our household garbage bills pay 9.7% on our garbage tax, and commercial and industrial facilities pay 17% on their garbage bills, and that raises a little bit over $100 million a year. Last I looked, it was about $102 million. The legislature is also, through the capital investment and bonding bills, has made significant investment in expanding local recycling and composting infrastructure, and that doesn't include the millions of dollars in private investment that have been put into the system. Through that solid waste tax, there are SCORE grants available to counties for recycling and waste reduction. Last I looked, in 2022, it was about $18.5 million that are flowing out. And last year, the legislature put and upped the grants and loans programs through the Pollution Control Agency, and one of them that just caught my eye was just another additional $1 million to expand waste reduction and reuse in the counties. Mr. Chairman, I think the points here are that there is a structure in place and it is adequately well funded here in the state of Minnesota. I want to go back to last year's session again. There was $600,000 appropriated by the legislature to the Pollution Control Agency to conduct a study on resource management here in the state of Minnesota. That review was supposed to go through and look at programs, policies, resources needed to reduce waste by 90% in 2045. Look at current waste programs and their impacts and opportunities in the current system. Look at the strategic programmatic regulatory and policy initiatives to look at source reduction here in the state of Minnesota. And that report is due in July 15th of 2025. So, Mr. Chairman, I just think that there are the processes in place. There is a report coming in. I think we should take a look at it. And just one last point on regards to the bill, Mr. Chairman, is that there is not a mention of products that are regulated by federal law on their packaging rules. But thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
Just a reminder, 2 minutes for each testifier. Nels Paulson, Conservation Minnesota.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members, and welcome to all the new friends from out of state who are here to discuss the bill sitting behind me. My name is Nels Paulson, and I serve as the Policy Director at Conservation Minnesota. We're a statewide nonprofit advocacy organization with members in all 87 Minnesota counties, and we advocate here at the Capitol on the issues our members tell us to advocate for. And that includes advocating on issues including recycling and garbage. I'll begin by reiterating the problem that Commissioner Reinhart mentioned. We have a trash problem. We know now that burying or burning our trash is not a sustainable long-term solution. We know that we need to stop feeding landfills and incinerators like the Hennepin Energy Recovery Center, or the HERC. While recycling rates have been stuck, as was mentioned, in the mid-40% for years, the amount of trash we're generating is growing. I'll remind you again what Commissioner Reinhart said, that by 2042, the trash in the metro is expected to grow by almost 20%. In about that same time, global plastic production is expected to double. And we're running out of landfill capacity to manage our trash problem. We need solutions. One important piece of the puzzle is the Packaging Waste and Cost Reduction Act. We participated for years with Representative Jordan and stakeholders in the bill development because we recognize the importance of getting this bill right. There are fingerprints from dozens of stakeholders on this bill. The bill will make significant progress by disincentivizing single-use plastics and wasteful packaging by implementing eco-modulated fees. Strong performance targets are the backbone of this bill and will ensure that over time producers finally become accountable to reducing wasteful packaging and single-use plastics. The bill proposes that by 2032, all packaging must be recyclable, reusable, or compostable. This is a remarkable target, and one that will make producers accountable and responsible for the products they make and package. This accountability of producers is lacking in our current system. You may hear testifiers from industry who oppose the bill and say things like, let's only do a study. We don't need waste reduction targets in statute. And my reply is that without strong performance targets or goals in statute, we don't know what we're striving for. Strong goals are fundamental to this bill. In summary, our statewide trash and recycling problems are complex, and this will require diverse and innovative policies to push us towards zero waste. This act is a major piece of the puzzle to get Minnesota on track. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Andy Hackman, Ameripat.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. My name is Andy Hackman on behalf of AmeriPen. AmeriPen is the National Trade Association, represents packaging suppliers, consumer brands companies like General Mills, Procter & Gamble, Clorox, and Lysol, and also folks involved in the waste management recycling sector. You've got a copy of my written testimony, so I'm not going to read through that today. But want to hit on a couple of points. We appreciate that the sponsor and advocates in favor of this legislation have had pretty extensive communication process working together to try to understand how EPR works in states and how we are challenged in some states to finding a system that's workable. There are four states that have EPR programs currently on the books, and we are navigating a pretty diverse set of policies with regard to making those programs work. There's not currently another state law that's actually in effect at this point. We're still in the regulatory development phase in those other states and are working through different stakeholders' processes. In terms of what we think is good about the legislation, we think that the structure in terms of having the producer responsibility organization run by those producers and have authority to take action, to coordinate amongst producers and to set rates and work with folks in the solid waste sector, we appreciate that that's in the legislation. We appreciate that it's not a government-run program, quite frankly, and solely run by the Pollution Control Agency. But we do have some concerns that we feel need to be addressed in order for us to move forward on the legislation and have a really workable and robust system here in Minnesota. We feel that the performance rates are somewhat putting the cart before the horse. There's a needs assessment process that's been alluded to that would occur underneath the legislation to look at what's feasible, to look at the infrastructure, and to develop potential where we can go for rates for recycling, reuse, and those factors, and all the other states that have taken action have relied on those needs assessment processes to help shape the goals for the program moving forward. The definition of producer is something that we believe needs to be fixed. It's really important that we know who's responsible for complying with the law. And we've had significant questions in other states as to where the actual responsibility for paying into the system and whose product it is when we've got co-packing relationships where there might be one name on the actual label, but it's manufactured by somebody else. So we really need to get the definition of producer correct in the legislation. We believe that there's some issues with regard to reusable packaging where they're giving a significant advantage, only paying fees once, but yet there's potentially programmatic costs that recur year after year for reusable packaging. And then finally, the determination of what's considered actually recyclable or not is also an important factor. So I don't want to take too much more of the committee's time. Happy to be a part of the process and happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Kirk Kadelka, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and want to thank the author for bringing this bill forward. Minnesota is a leader in waste reduction, reuse, and recycling, but we have a ways to go to achieve the goals set out by the legislature in the Waste Management Act, and this legislation provides the resources and systems to do that. Minnesota has a 5.9 million ton trash problem a year, and only less than half of that is being recycled, meaning the rest is going to disposal systems. The results are negative environmental, human health, and economic impacts. Just to put a little bit of data to that, Minnesotans would save about 4.57 million metric tons of carbon dioxide due to waste management practices. That's about 970,000 cars that would passenger vehicles coming off the road if we were able to reduce, reuse, and recycle our materials. In addition, it's lost economic benefit. Today, we throw away about 1 million tons of recycled materials each year. The value of those materials is $143 million and would equal new and expanded businesses that would create over 15,000 jobs. It's true, Minnesota has a strong base to start from, and it's why we need the provisions in this bill that really look at waste prevention, reuse, and recycling program, and more importantly, results. There are strong provisions in here that affect these areas. There's been concern about having a statewide requirements or targets, but there's a few things to remember here. It's important for MPCA to have a target and requirement number to carry out the bill in a few areas, such as determining the quality of the plan and compliance with the law. We don't want this just to be an exercise of them doing something and we're just checking to see if they filled out the right piece. We want this to be results-based orientated. The legislature has also already spoken on this issue. Legislature set a 75% recycling goal for the metro area by 2030, which is a higher number and sooner than what is in the bill. The author gives everyone more time. The bill also allows flexibility by MPCA to adjust those based on the needs assessment. So if things do look different because of the study, they can be adjusted accordingly. And other states also have the same requirement of statewide requirements in the bill as it's passed, two other states of the four mentioned. While Minnesota is a leader, we can't rest on our laurels or we'll risk sliding backwards. We're starting to see cracks in the system. Communities are finding it harder and harder to provide curbside recycling. An example is Virginia, Minnesota. This month dropped its curbside recycling due to the cost. And there are other communities like Bemidji, Hibbing, and similar sized communities that previously made that same decision. Thank you, Chair and committee members, and be happy to answer any questions later.
Thank you. Amber Backus, National Waste and Recycling Association.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota chapter of the National Waste and Recycling Association and the member companies that have generated over 17,000 jobs and provide collection, sorting, recycling, and disposal of waste in Minnesota. And as you've heard from everybody, we do have a great story about recycling to tell in this state, and we are consistently in the top 10 with rates at greater than 45%, thanks to private and public investment in recycling collection and recycling processing facilities. We do not want to put either our recycling rate or our private sector and state-funded recycling infrastructure at risk with the proposed legislation. Even with our high recycling rate, we continue to increase our investments and strive to do more. Our members are committed to working to reduce waste and reuse and recycle more materials, but we want to build on the existing systems and hundreds of millions of dollars the state and our member companies have made in infrastructure to support the system, not blow them up. The bill before you creates an entirely new bureaucracy that allows the brand manufacturers, as you've heard, the PROs, to run our businesses. Instead of our member haulers and processors competing to win the business of residents in a municipality or local governments themselves, as they currently do, the PRO will be setting collection and processing territories and the fees they will pay us. Brand owners are empowered to oversee an industry that they are not specialized in. Based on the current legislation, the new brand owner-run PROs will, as I said, set reimbursement rates for the work our members do, reducing margins and the ability to increase investments in facility upgrades that allow us to recycle even more material. They'll disrupt and potentially eliminate existing contracts between our members and current customers, and they'll reduce competition in the marketplace by creating service territories that force out smaller haulers. From our perspective, the bill is giving way too much power to the PRO and disrupting relationships with customers that our members have been building for years and in some instances multiple generations. Before implementing a complete overhaul of the system, we would echo that the state should undertake a needs assessment and look at the waste system comprehensively to determine where there are gaps and make recommendations on where additional infrastructure is needed and what other material types could be recycled. While the bill before you does contain a needs assessment, it's charged with figuring out the needs of an EPR system, not whether an EPR system is needed in the first place. Again, we appreciate the opportunity to testify and provide comments to Representative Jordan and the bill's proponents, and we do support their efforts to drive end markets for materials by including post-consumer recycled content standards. But the changes in the DE1 don't do enough to protect a system that has made Minnesota a leader in recycling, and we ask the committee not to move forward with the bill that allows the brand owners to run it. Thank you very much for your time.
Brian Martinson, Solid Waste Administrators Association.
Good afternoon, Chair, and committee members. I'm Gabby Batsko, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the Minnesota Solid Waste Administrators Association. I'm the Tri-County Solid Waste Coordinator, and I coordinate waste-related initiatives for Stearns, Benton, and Sherburne counties. And I'm also the president-elect of SWA. So SWA is an organization of county and solid waste district professionals and related waste specialists, and is an affiliate of the Association of Minnesota Counties, or AMC, which represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. SWA advocates for policies and funding that improve and promote responsible waste management and reduce environmental impacts of solid waste, as directed by the Waste Management Act, or Minnesota Statutes Chapter 115A. SWA and AMC support product stewardship among manufacturers, retailers, and consumers, with an emphasis on industry through the Extended Producer Responsibility, or EPR, framework. We support a producer-led material reduction, reuse, repair, and recycling program to reduce a product's life cycle impacts, impacts on the environment, and public health. EPR must include transparency and accountability measures that are accessible, maximize the use of existing infrastructure, and provide local governments with a voluntary role in development and implementation, and not rely on local government financing. For the 2024 session, SWA has prioritized action to move the dial on a significant segment of the waste stream, which is packaging. We support the Packaging Waste and Cost Reduction Act and believe it will lead to an improved recyclability of product packaging, reduce packaging waste, and incentivize sustainable packaging choices, all of which are necessary to meet our state climate and waste goals. It prioritizes and builds on existing reuse and recycling infrastructure, maximizes efficiency, and displaces taxpayer funding for recycling and reuse, making it an equitable option for a more sustainable future. SWA encourages your support for HF3577, and thanks Rep. Jordan for her leadership and as the chief's bill, the bill's chief offer. Thank you guys so much, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Peter Glessing, Medical Alley.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peter Glessing, and I'm the Senior Director of Policy and Advocacy at Medical Alley. Medical Alley proudly represents a network of more than 800 leading health technology and care companies, research organizations, and cutting-edge innovators working in service to our mission to activate and amplify healthcare transformation on behalf of patients around the world. Our partners understand the significant challenges facing this industry and are working to ensure care becomes more accessible, more affordable, and more effective for everyone. It is with these guiding principles that we express concern about House File 3577's impact on access to care for medical devices, medical drugs, medical equipment, medical products, infant formula, medical food, and nutritional supplements. For medical devices, FDA requirements govern the methods, facilities, and controls used in design, manufacturing, packaging, labeling, storage, installation, and servicing of all finished devices. This is to ensure that the products are safe and effective for patients and consumers. Medical devices must remain sterile, free from contamination, and protected from any mechanical damage throughout the supply chain process. Packaging must be designed to meet these requirements in order to protect the medical devices and help ensure their effective delivery. Manufacturers have very little control of the type of packaging available from their suppliers to meet these standards, and therefore cannot easily change it. Any additional requirements by individual states risks compliance with the FDA. Once a medical device has been given approval by the FDA and is through the supply chain process, it is made available to patients, hospitals, and consumers through various distribution channels. Products and equipment typically remain in service with the end user until they reach the stage for disposal. At which point some hospitals operate recycling programs or participate in partnerships with manufacturers and other organizations to recycle or repurpose their constituent materials. Many medical device manufacturers have specific sustainability goals and support recycling programs for their products and packaging. Some even operate stewardship and partnership programs to reclaim materials, including products and packaging from consumers and hospitals to divert material from the waste stream and support the circular economy. We ask members to ensure this legislation prioritizes access to medical care while allowing for environmental stewardship to be carefully managed by federal regulators and ensure consistent process and stable supply for life-saving medical equipment. Thank you.
Thank you. Lucy Mullaney, Eureka.
Hi, thank you, Chair Hansen, members of the committee, and Rep. Jordan for your leadership on the issue. I'm Lucy Mullaney. I'm the Director of Policy and Advocacy with Eureka Recycling. We're a nonprofit social enterprise recycler here in the Twin Cities. We're a proud union shop with union mechanics and drivers. Our team sorts 100,000 tons of residential recyclables each year into 15 different commodities that support local supply chains. About 80% of our feedstock is turned into new products here in Minnesota, and 90% in the greater Midwest. We work to demonstrate that recycling can and should be done in ways that benefit the environment, communities, and the regional economy. Unfortunately, the growing packaging crisis is making our work increasingly difficult. Problematic and unnecessary packaging is trashing our recycling system, adding unnecessary costs to our communities and polluting our environment. This bill holds producers responsible for these impacts and drives them towards much needed changes. Additionally, the bill provides some much needed stability to commodity markets here in Minnesota by including strong minimum requirements for recycled content. We've also worked really closely with Rep. Jordan and other stakeholders to protect the open and fair bidding process that haulers like us across our state are currently accustomed to, and ensure that priority is given to service providers here in Minnesota that provide good jobs, strong safety standards, and quality services. And finally, as you've heard, the bill sets really important targets for source reduction and reuse. We cannot recycle and compost our way out of the packaging crisis. We need a fundamental shift toward reduction and reuse systems. I want to stress that the targets included for source reduction, reuse, recycling, composting, and recycled content are data-driven and appropriate for Minnesota to build off of the successful progress that we've made as a state. The bill offers a pathway for the agency to amend these targets based on the needs assessment, and we very much appreciate the position that the MPCA has taken to support these targets and the language that they've put forth to make it clear that producers must meet targets and the agency will enforce them. Over the coming weeks, we look forward to continuing to work to strengthen the bill, and we've included additional details in our written testimony. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jacob Cassidy, Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. My name is Jacob Cassidy. I'm the Director of Government Relations with the Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers. AHEM represents about 160 companies that manufacture major portable and floor care appliances, as well as industry suppliers. So AHEM supports all material packaging and extended producer responsibility. I want to be very clear on that. We're not quite there with this bill. There's some good in it. We're waiting to see as it goes through the process of what it looks like before we make a determination. One of the things that our members, durable goods manufacturers, are really looking for is that, as we've seen in other states, just to give you some idea, when a major appliance is delivered to your home that you purchased at, say, a major retailer, usually that product is removed from the packaging outside of the home. It is brought into the home, and the packaging returns on that delivery truck along with the used or old appliance for recycling. In Oregon, they included a provision in their law that would exempt this material as long as it could be proven to be recycled at a responsible end market. And what our members would look for is something along that line, really a consideration for the exclusion of industrial commercial packaging, because even with a smaller or portable appliance that you'd purchase and take home yourself, while that material would go into your curbside recycling bin, the bigger packaging that pallet was protected with of fans, for example, we would like to see that as well, because it shouldn't really enter, or at least be given an opportunity to not be included in this through a responsible right recycling and systems such as that. With respect to Oregon, really quickly, again, this provision was included in Oregon. It was included in California. Our members would really like to see the Minnesota legislature and this committee and other committees that this is referred to take a look at what Oregon has passed and try to harmonize as much as possible. Really quickly, durable goods manufacturers are stakeholders in this, much like any fast-moving consumer good. We look to be included in this conversation. We see this as a start, and I will sit back down and look forward to taking any questions you all have. Thank you.
Delinda Thomas, the Recycling Partnership.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, Rep. Jordan, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Delinda Thomas, and I represent the Recycling Partnership, and I'm testifying in support of House File 3577, especially when paired with the bottle bill legislation. I lead state policy work for the Recycling Partnership, a national nonprofit that collaborates with communities, policymakers, and more than 80 companies to invest and strengthen public recycling programs across the country. We work with those companies, big brands and manufacturers, to assist and insist to help them uphold their sustainability goals to serve people on the planet. Through our efforts across the country, we've identified that well-designed extended producer responsibility policy that strengthens quality recycling is a critical ingredient to achieving the circular economy. I'm also an Oregonian, and so I'm part of that EPR program rolling out and those rules being put forward. Want to say that our research clearly shows that EPR policies like this, Oregon is similar to Minnesota in that we're a strong recycling, but not at the very top, that it would see a tripling of the recycling rate of the residential recycling that's collected here in Minnesota, which would return hundreds of thousands of tons of recycled materials to market and reinjecting more than $20 million of lost material value into the economy and rescuing them from landfill and incinerators. Some have mistakenly argued that EPR will increase costs for consumers. We've looked at every major market around the world where producer responsibility has been implemented. We have not found any credible evidence that compliance fees have affected consumer prices. With thoughtful, well-designed, strong EPR programs globally, outcomes show no credible evidence at a link between fees and how much consumers pay for products. This solid bill is resulting from a multi-year broad and robust stakeholder engagement process, which has been included in the amendments. And should this be moved forward, we hope to see it continue to improve to address those concerns, and we support this passage. Thank you for including us in today's hearing.
Thank you. Frazier Willman, American Forest and Paper Association.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Frazier Willman. I'm speaking on behalf of the American Forest and Paper Association. In Minnesota, our industry employs more than 22,000 with an annual payroll of over $1.7 billion. The estimated state and local taxes paid by the forest products industry totals $103 million annually. This production and the associated jobs take place at member facilities across the state, including Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, and St. Paul. EPR policies are typically applied as a solution to hazardous, hard-to-handle materials with low recycling rates. This is not the case for paper. Our industry has a measurable record of success in making paper and paper-based packaging more circular and sustainable through market-based approaches, so we must respectfully oppose the bill as drafted. 68% of paper was recovered for recycling in 2022, and we have met or exceeded 63% since 2009. Recycling is integrated into our business. Our members operate over 100 material recovery facilities, including two in Minnesota, and 80% of paper mills use recycled fiber. 81.4% of Minnesotans have access to curbside recycling, and 73.3% have access to drop-off recycling, reflecting the successes of the state's recycling infrastructure investments. The industry plans on continuing its investment with around $7 billion in infrastructure investment by 2025, resulting in over 9 million more tons in capacity for recycled fiber. House filing 3577 stands to impede the vitality of our industry, limit the access to products consumers rely on a daily basis, and broadly prescribes problems that do not reflect the realities of our industry. Fiber recovery is not only a tenet of our industry's commitment to sustainability, but is also a key component of paper's value proposition. The legislation is broad in its definition of paper products and does not take into account the life cycle of specific products, such as unprinted paper that is an intermediary product unlikely to be found in waste streams. From the perspective of the paper industry, this bill burdens a successful model where fiber is actively recovered to be put to its highest value use. EPR programs are untested in the U.S. context, and our evidence shows that such programs do not contain costs for consumers or increase paper recycling rates. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before this committee and share our perspective. I invite you to review our written testimony to better understand our concerns and ask that you please reach out if I can answer any questions or provide myself as a resource. Thank you all.
Kate Bailey, Association of Plastic Recyclers.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. My name is Kate Bailey, and I'm here with the Association of Plastic Recyclers. We are the only North American association focused exclusively on improving recycling of plastics. Our goal is simple. We want to recycle more plastics, and that's why I'm here in support of this bill. Our top priority is working with U.S. states to implement this type of producer-funded recycling program because it is the most proven effective solution to increase the recycling of plastics and other materials. I have 3 points I would like to share. First, I am here on behalf of the U.S. businesses that recycle your plastic bottles, your milk jugs, your yogurt containers, each and every day. Recycling has myriad environmental benefits, but it is first and foremost a business. This bill is about investing in more recycling businesses across Minnesota and the Upper Midwest, and not investing in more landfills and incinerators. We are here to create green jobs and a cleaner economy through this bill. Second, producer-funded recycling is proven and will work well in Minnesota. It works every day across most of Canada and Europe. It is being implemented in 4 U.S. states. The United Nations has declared that producer-funded recycling is a critical global strategy to reduce plastic pollution. There is global consensus that this policy is needed, and now is the time for Minnesota to move forward. Lastly, this is a good bill, as you've heard from many stakeholders. Yes, it's not a perfect bill, but that's not how policy always works. It is a solid framework with a practical rollout over the next 4 years. The most important thing is to start moving forward now so that we can have better recycling, reduce plastic waste, reduce climate pollution, and create green jobs while saving money for local governments. This is a win-win for Minnesota, for the economy, and our environment, as we've outlined in our written testimony. And I thank Senator Representative Jordan for her leadership and for your time today. Thank you.
Mike Martin, Our World.
She gets up and walks out. I'm a senator.
Hi, my name is Michael Martin. I am the founder and CEO of Our World. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am here to speak in support of the Packaging Waste and Cost Reduction Act, House File 3577. I'm here to tell you that reuse works today. Minnesota-based Our World is building the national infrastructure and movement for the reuse economy. We provide a turnkey solution where we provide logistics and washing to solve for reuse. We are operating in 7 states and 44 cities in the United States and are starting to operate in Minnesota this year. The hottest topic in the waste space is reuse, and it is being led out of Minnesota by Our World. When we started the reuse movement, we were the first reuse company in the country. There are now dozens of other reuse companies operating all across the country and hundreds around the world. We all know the reduce, reuse, recycle saying, well, it's an order of priority. We need to move towards reuse. Mm-hmm. Reuse is cost effective, it builds communities, creates jobs, and is better for the environment. My company, Our World, has proven this all across the country. We've stopped 47 tons of plastic from ever being produced and have washed over 7 million cups that would have gone to landfill. I want to be clear, the issue is not just about tackling single-use plastics, it's about single-use anything. I used to be an investment banker on Wall Street, so I know what I'm talking about here. It makes no sense that businesses do not factor the disposal cost of their single-use packaging into their P&L. Instead, corporations externalize this cost and make taxpayers subsidize their profits by paying for the disposal of corporations' single-use packaging. This is wrong. EPR legislation that supports reuse starts to address this injustice. I ask you to support this bill because we all must be responsible for our own waste. With that, I would like to thank Representative Jordan and the chair and members of the committee for allowing me to testify today. Thank you.
Ivana Stark, Clean Water Action.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. I'm Ivana Stark, State Director of Clean Water Action Minnesota. Our mission is to protect water quality for future generations. I want to talk about plastic and waste, and I'm grateful to Representative Jordan for bringing this forward, and we need to talk about this urgent solution that's needed. Waste fills our water with debris, overtakes communities across the globe as we export it, and the chemicals within it leach into our landfills and into our groundwater, which we in turn drink, and it makes us sick. The average American produces 5 pounds of waste per day, or 1,800 pounds per year, and about 62% of that waste is landfilled or incinerated. Plastic waste is composed of roughly 13,000 different chemicals, with 3,200 of those being listed by the EPA as chemicals of concern. Health impacts from the chemicals in plastic include cardiovascular disease, stroke, infertility, cancer, thyroid problems, obesity, diabetes, and more. Plastic breaks down into microplastics and are now found in placenta, cord blood, breast milk, and sperm. Humans are starting their lives exposed to microplastics and the toxic chemicals in them. More and more often, there are consumption warnings on fish because of microplastic contaminants, and it is estimated that an average American consumes 5 grams of microplastic a week, and that's about the weight of a credit card that we're eating. Producers have become skilled in transferring responsibility for pollution onto the consumer in an attempt to release themselves from their responsibility for what they create, they market, and they sell. To achieve a healthier, more sustainable future, we must work together as producers and consumers. Manufacturers must take responsibility for the life cycle stages of their product through disposal. The current recycling structure isn't working because we clearly have a waste problem and we don't have time to wait. Waste, especially plastic waste, is also an environmental justice problem as it's shipped to incinerators and chemical recycling facilities that are located in EJ communities, increasing toxic emissions and particulate matter, contributing to major public health problems like asthma and cancer. Additionally, plastic waste contributes to global environmental justice concerns as toxic and plastic waste is shipped overseas and concentrates in poorer countries. This bill is a positive step forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Kuseth and John Rodman, Coalition to Reduce Plastic.
Thank you. My name is Mary Kuseth, and I appreciate this opportunity to talk in support of HF 3577. I am a researcher and scientist in public and environmental health, and I've been studying environmental contaminants called microplastics for nearly a decade. And in that time, I've seen this discipline erupt with irrefutable evidence that these tiny specks of plastics are getting everywhere. I have personally sampled Minnesota lakes, rivers, and springs, indoor and ambient air, as well as consumer products, and the only constant is I never find nothing. As this discipline matures, technical advancements allow us to isolate, count, and better characterize what we find. And through this process, we're learning that the problem is worse than we previously thought. For example, I examined bottled water in 2017 and found 4 particles per liter, but the smallest particle that I could find was about 100 microns, which is like the width of a human hair. A year later, my research advisor conducted an extensive bottled water study, and she was able to characterize particles that were 7 microns, and she found 325 particles per liter. Just last month, another bottled water study emerged. They found 240,000 particles per liter, and 90% of them were in the nanoparticle range. So basically, the closer we look, the more we find. Last month, the Duluth News Tribune highlighted a team of Minnesota researchers who previously found 1 to 3 particles per liter in Lake Superior water, but now with more sophisticated techniques, they're counting 600 to 1,500 particles per liter. Also alarming are the already mentioned microplastics in human bodies, lymph nodes, lungs, placenta, breast milk, and blood. So this is a pivotal moment where we can either hope that the science is going to trend in another direction, or we can take proactive action now. There's a code of ethics in science where you can't conduct a randomized clinical trial on human subjects if there's evidence that giving or withholding treatment causes harm. My question, as a parent, does society at large have a code of ethics? Or are we just going to proceed with this exposure experiment and hope for the best? Minnesotans are aware of this issue. I've been teaching environmental science courses at Dunwoody College for 20 years. Every semester before I go into any topics or coursework, I ask students to rank their top environmental concerns. Plastic pollution never makes this list. But this year, in the fall, half of my students ranked it as the top five concern. This spring, 60%. These are students from the Twin Cities and surrounding suburbs. They aren't radical environmental activists. This is a trade school where people are learning to be machinists and construction workers. These Minnesotans who will be working in industry are concerned about plastic waste. Plastic trash is a systemic problem that cannot be solved by individual choices. We must build a sustainable packaging infrastructure that prioritizes human health and environmental health and bolsters local economies by setting strong performance standards in legislation and not permitting chemical recycling to meet recycling performance targets. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Is Mr. Rodman?
Yeah, Rodman, yeah.
John Rodman, Coalition to Reduce Plastic.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and committee members. Since retiring last August, I've actively pursued climate advocacy work, and as a member of the Coalition for Plastic Reduction, quickly became concerned about the rapid increase of plastic waste and the significant contribution to climate change. I'm also a semi-professional landscape photographer specializing in winter landscapes. This year, the year of no winter, I've had almost no opportunity to do so. I never dreamed such a scenario would occur during my lifetime. It makes me incredibly sad when I think of a winterless Minnesota in the future. Some facts about the scope of the problem. The rate of plastic recycling in 2018 was 8% and is estimated to stay below 10% for the foreseeable future. Recycling of plastics is not the solution due to all the toxic chemicals contained in plastic. We've already heard 3,200 plus, and the contamination and pollution that result from the recycling process itself. In Minnesota in 2019, 86% of plastic waste ended up in landfills. Burying plastic waste is estimated to cost U.S. taxpayers $5 billion annually. Chemical recycling is not a viable alternative. It is not recycling. The term refers to the breaking down of plastic into dirty fuels, with more greenhouse gases being released in the process. What needs to be done? A huge first step is passing this bill. This bill would reduce single-use packaging by 45% over the next 14 years, reduce pollution in low-income and environmental justice communities where packaging is produced, landfilled, and incinerated, save taxpayer money without costing Minnesota anything, as companies would be required to pay for management and recycling of plastic waste, reinvigorate the state's recycling system because packaging would be reduced, reused, or redesigned to be truly recyclable and or compostable, and recycling facilities would no longer be inundated with plastic waste, and position Minnesota as a global leader in reducing plastic pollution. It's critically important to not only pass this bill, but pass a strong bill that reduces plastic production with specific target goals and significant consequences if targets are not met. The bill must also ban false solutions like chemical recycling. We must act now to reduce the harm from plastic to our climate, our health, our economy, and our environment. Thank you, Rep. Jordan, for presenting this bill and for allowing me to testify today.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Is there anyone else? Members, any questions? Oh, we have a list.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for this bill. Thank you to everyone who came to testify. A reminder that our decisions here really do have national and global impacts. Representative Jordan, there was a lot of testimony here that had a lot to say about a lot of different areas that interact with the legislation that you're presenting, and I just kind of want to zoom in a little bit and just say, you know, I have been following for a long time the process, or lack thereof, in getting the HERC incinerator shut down. You mentioned asthma. I have asthma in my family as well. I'm not in Minneapolis, but I'm just across the river. And it seems to me that for a very long time we have heard that we cannot close the HERC because we are just going to continue to produce more waste, and we have to be realistic about how we need to burn that waste. And then when we have an opportunity to try to find a way to produce less waste, we hear why we can't actually go forward with a less production of waste to solve that problem. And I'm concerned about a feedback loop here that's just going to end up cycling until we're all full of plastic and, you know, everyone's dead or whatever. I don't want that. I don't want everyone to have asthma. I don't want to consume a credit card of plastic every week, which I believe is something that I just heard and is just very scary to me. So does this bill get us closer to the goals we're actually trying to define, like closing the HERC, having healthier air, having less of these microplastics in what we're breathing and drinking? Are we moving towards the actual goals that we are trying to achieve?
Jordan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Finke, yes. This goal, there are goals about actually reducing the amount of waste in our waste stream contained in this goal. I do represent Hennepin County, and I do represent a community that is downwind from the HERC. The acronym has left my brain, but it is the incinerator in North Minneapolis. My constituents and Representative Lee's constituents I hear from constituents nearly daily about the effects that the HERC have and their concerns related to that. I've also spoken to my Hennepin County Commissioner, Irene Fernando, who also represents the HERC, and numerous other Hennepin County commissioners who do say that this bill is essential to moving us towards shutting down the HERC. You heard Conservation Minnesota and many others talk about the need to starve the HERC. This is what this bill does. Without actually diverting waste from our waste streams, we will continue to need a place to put them, and the place where we put them, unfortunately, is in incinerators and in landfills. And landfills have their own health concerns as well. It's not, it's not constructive to talk about whether a landfill is better or whether incinerating is better. What's better is actually reducing our waste and dealing with our waste in a responsible way. And that's what this bill does.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Yeah, I mean, when we burn our waste, we are just consuming it. That's what the testimony indicated today. We are not getting rid of it. We are actually consuming it into our bodies in ways that is going to have extremely detrimental long-term impacts. So we need to do this right now. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for this bill. There's a lot of testifiers. I heard build on what we have. There is a structure in place. What we have is consuming a lot. We have every week, I don't know about actually every single person here in this room, we have one thing in common, is that every single week, or maybe multiple times a day, we bring out a trash bag from our homes and we bring it outside. And there's a recycling bin and we put that out. And magically, these trucks come and they take it away. And we don't always think about where it goes. And a lot of the public does not think about where it goes. So we have elected officials around this table to decide things like this. And we have to come up with solutions. And I don't know that I heard a lot of solutions from the businesses. And that, to me, is problematic as an elected official. Because we know we have a trash and waste problem in the state of Minnesota. I did not hear a lot about sustainability goals for businesses and things that they have reached and done. I do know that we have a public health issue that is closely correlated with what we are talking about today. And so the microplastics, the water contamination, all of the health issues, there is a cost to pay. I guess what I guess maybe Mr. Quillis could come up and just answer that question about sustainability goals on the chamber, if there's sustainability goals that you can tell us about. And then the other thing, Representative Jordan, I do hope that we can put somebody that would represent public health on the advisory board, because I think that's a huge issue that they need to be represented as well.
Representative Jordan, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. I mean, I think I'm proud of two points. The thing I am proud of our Minnesota companies is they do have strong sustainability goals. I hear from them often. I've found that our corporate partners care deeply about our environment, and often they have a corporate sustainability page on their websites. And so I We've also heard from businesses who are in the business of recycling here, and they should be listened to as well. To the point about the advisory council, if you look through the written testimony, I read it all. So I will let you know that there are a lot of people who have ideas about the advisory council. And so I would encourage that. I love the idea of putting someone who is responsible for public health on there, because this is ultimately a public health bill. Lots of people have ideas and things that they want to see on that advisory council. I would encourage to folks listening or folks sitting behind me to get me language on what that would look like, to make sure that is being adhered to in terms of the advisory council, because there's a lot of really good ideas. And it really is supposed to be, the advisory council really is supposed to be that advisory council. And that is really what differentiates them from the PRO itself, is the PRO is really the implementation of what the advisory council is getting from stakeholders across our state, and then putting that into action and making sure. So the PRO is holding them, is saying these are the goals, and then or the advisory council is saying here are the goals, and it's the PRO's job to go and do it.
Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Edelson, if you're referring to the chamber itself, or are you referring to the chamber's members? Because either way, there is a great program, I can tell you, in our office that deals with recycling, ranging from batteries to paper to aluminum to plastic. But if you're talking about our members, I'm going to echo Representative Jordan's comments also. I'm proud to sit here and represent the people that range from Fortune 500 companies that have sustainability goals down to some of our smallest members that have, you know, in the hospitality industry and the retail industry. I'm proud to represent them here because they step up time and time again with sustainability goals and try and participate in this system that we've got set up and make things better here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Chair. Well, thank you, Mr. Quillis. I guess that's great. So I'm glad that you're here with the chamber and all of the businesses. And it doesn't really speak to the sustainability goals that maybe some of your larger members have. In terms of some of the largest members, maybe like Target, for instance, would be an example. Is Amazon a member of your chamber?
You know, Mr. Chairman, Representative Edelson, I'd have to go back and look. Before I comment on that.
Mr. Chair, I think it's really important because I think people in each one of our districts cannot be responsible for this. This is a public policy issue. And sustainability goals that companies make don't always have accountability to the state of Minnesota. And so that's what I think Representative Jordan is doing here. And I really appreciate your goals and this bill. And so I guess I just would say I hope that the chamber can find a way to support this bill, because I think all of us, all of our communities are plagued with this problem. And so I guess I just would hope that next time you testify, is in support of this bill. Thank you.
Representative Gilman.
All right, thank you, Chair. So I just had a question in regards to, so why are we creating another system and not working within the framework of the recycling piece that already is happening? And we've heard both for and against this bill. So I just am curious, because I believe in the beginning of you just presenting, you talked about it's our personal responsibility. And I'll just share you just a quick just deal about me personally. I've been recycling since I've been just a young girl. and it was very valuable for our family, because that's how my dad paid the bills, is we drove around in a vehicle collecting glass, having to sort it by color, and he would deliver that over in Chaska and get money that would help pay our bills. So again, I've been recycling forever, and we hear about things recycling folks in greater Minnesota that are closing their areas for drop-off. So currently my family has to drive two towns over to deliver our recycling, and it's because of people that are exploiting the opportunity to just drive into their town and drop it, and it's sorted there, or if it's even single sort, because they're bringing their garbage. People are bringing garbage, you know, to the recycling and using it as a just total waste dump. And so cameras put up, you know, things that are implied that you'll have charges brought, and with how thin our peace and police officers are and what they have to deal with all around the state, I'm just curious, like, we do have to take personal responsibility. It's a conviction of mine and my family's to recycle. And I think we have to be cautious proceeding with some of these ideas if we don't have buy-in from the community, because we are the end user. And tell me if people do not get packages delivered to their house, you know, and there's an opportunity to recycle that. So I want to know, like, from us sitting around here, why we cannot, you know, use the framework that we have already and partner with where it's working. Like, where is it working and where isn't it working? Because the framework's already there. And I've been doing it for 40-plus years. I won't tell you how old I am.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Gilman. I actually think this bill really addresses a lot of what you're saying, because this bill does leverage existing infrastructure. So it's not it's taking everything we have and then taking it to the next level. And in fact, it was people from all of our communities who testified in favor of this bill, whether it's from your counties that are supporting it or whether it's from your solid waste administrators that are supporting this bill. Communities need this. And right now, we do have that personal responsibility for our recycling because we're paying for it in the form of taxes. And we don't necessarily, I use this example all the time, is that, you know, you go to your grocery store, you have so many choices in terms of what laundry detergent you're going to buy. Are you going to buy the hypoallergenic? Are you going to buy the pods? Are you going to buy the flakes? Are you going to buy, I mean, I have to smell them all to determine which one I want to buy first. But they all come in plastic, right? And so we need to make sure that that plastic that you are currently paying for and assuming that responsibility for, and that you don't really have a choice in what your laundry detergent comes in, you're paying for that because you're paying those taxes to your counties. And your counties are asking for help to be able to build on their existing infrastructure, which is what this bill does. And so this bill is taking that existing program and making sure that it can succeed and continue to recycle more.
Representative Gilman.
Great. Thank you so much. But it still does not address people that are exploiting the opportunity to be able to recycle by dumping their waste in it and things like that. So then that's not available. Like, so that part is not happening. So I'm just wondering how we can educate people on, you know, there's education. But again, if you do not have buy-in of people finding that this is valuable, how can it, the end user is going to be responsible for paying extra when they go to the store anyway.
Representative Jordan, and then we're going to go to Representative Purcell, and then we're going to go to Representative Heintzman, and then we're going to be done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Gilman. Part of the duties of the PRO that will be taking these fees will be public education for people so they know, like, oh, this is where this needs to go or this is where that needs to go, and that will be given to your government, like your county governments, to be able to actually educate people on what is recyclable, what isn't, and then also using that to turn it into new products through an end market. So if you're concerned about education on what is recyclable or isn't, this is another great bill to support.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. I was going to bring this up before you mentioned it, but I know there are two companies that I'm aware of in the U.S. I now buy sheets of laundry detergent. They are packaged in a very tiny little, like, paperboard bag, and I'm so relieved that I don't have to have these big plastic jugs anymore. There are also other countries and parts of the world who don't use nearly as much plastic as we do, so I think another world is possible. Thank you for bringing this bill, and I want to just mention we've heard a lot about the HERC. In my community, the day we finished session, I was driving home, and at 1 in the morning, rolled down my windows, and we had so many smoky days up here at the Capitol. I was like, this smoke smells really different. Why does it smell like I'm in India, where I have traveled and absolutely loved, and found out that our landfill was on fire, and it remained on fire for weeks. And the county was unprepared. There's no water source. There was no way to put it out. And that was the smell of our plastics on fire. And it is not just necessarily these environmental justice communities. It's everyone. It impacts all of us. There is no away. When the truck comes and takes our garbage away, there is no away. It's either in the landfill or it's in the air or it's in our bodies or all of the above. So thank you for working diligently, taking all the meetings with all the people to try to make this the best version of the bill as you possibly can. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Purcell, for that anecdote. I think the thing that I think that's a perfect example why this model is a good one. Because a lot of those states because those companies that are making products that are made out of post-consumer content or in materials that are not plastic or easier to recycle, companies are going to be incentivized to put their laundry detergent in something that they will pay less for. So we have that's positive for us. And so consumers will have more choices in what their products are coming from or in what kind of packaging their products are coming with. And when you do see these more options for packaging in some other states and in Canada, for example, those are often states and Canada has programs like this already in place. And so you're seeing the benefit of those of a bill such as this. And that's exactly what we're trying to bring. That vision that you outlined is exactly what this bill is endeavoring to bring.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, are we planning on moving this bill out of committee yet?
Yes.
I would
give you a little time here.
And it's going to Commerce?
Going to Commerce.
I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative Heisman asked for a roll call.
I also have a couple of questions, if that's okay, Mr.
Yep.
Chair.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jordan, there's 33 new pages of regulation in this bill, and I'm reading through it as best I can, and quite honestly, I don't know the answer to this question, so I'm just going to ask you, do you believe the current solid waste taxes in Minnesota would be reduced if this bill becomes law, and will this program cost Minnesotans more than the current system?
Representative Jordan.
Mr. Chair, this program is intended to cost individual Minnesotans less.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that when I heard the Association of Plastic Recyclers testifying earlier, I heard that this legislation, I'm assuming as it's in four other states, is the most proven and that it's been implemented in those four other U.S. states. Has it been actually fully implemented and we can prove that your assertion that this bill will save the people of Minnesota money? Or is that just an assertion based on an expectation and hope that it will save people money? Because my information is that it has not been implemented, it's just been passed, and there's actually been a lot of problems with implementation. And if you could refute that or explain maybe why you assume that it would, I'd sure appreciate some data or some evidence to show that.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lead Heintzman. I think that would be a good question for the Association of Plastic Recyclers to discuss.
They could come forward quickly. Representative Heisman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. If the testifier could answer the question, I could repeat it if you'd like, but we're short on time.
My intention was to say being implemented. I apologize if I had not said that, but that is what I have in my written testimony. So four states have passed the bill. Colorado recently finished its needs assessment. That was one of the crucial first steps of this project. Many states have established their advisory boards, so active implementation is the current status.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having heard in testimony that this is, I'm assuming, referring to the language in this bill, it's the most proven, I would argue, on based on what we're hearing now, that that's actually not the case, that we don't know in many scenarios, probably the answers to the questions that most of us have had as we're hearing testimony from many people through the last few, almost an hour and a half. So, Mr. Chair, I hope that there's lots of opportunity to further discuss the many, many elements of this bill in future committees. I'm hearing that there may be as many as four more stops. I hope that's the case because we certainly didn't get a lot of time to discuss it today.
Plenty of opportunity in the future, and Representative Jordan, you're willing to work with people to continue to improve the bill, correct?
Mr. Chair, I have turned down one meeting that was requested of me of EPR, and it was an in-person meeting in Lithuania. That was during my cousin's wedding. So, no, that was the only meeting to date that I have turned down on this bill.
Representative Jordan, final comments?
Yes, it does. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. And thank you to all the testifiers who testified today. Again, what I just said stands. Please set up meetings with me. I am happy to discuss this bill and the many ways that it will improve our relationship with trash here in Minnesota. And with that, Mr. Chair, I do ask for members to support it moving to the Commerce Committee, and I would renew my motion to do so.
Representative Jordan renews her motion to pass House File 3577 as amended and refer it to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. Will the clerk take the roll?
Chair Hansen.
Yes.
Chair Hansen, aye. Representative Jordan.
Jordan, aye.
Representative Jordan, aye. Representative Heintzman.
No.
Representative Heintzman, no. Representative Bliss.
No.
Representative Bliss, no. Representative Brand.
Aye.
Representative Brand, aye. Representative Burkle.
No.
Representative Burkle, no. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Finke.
Yes.
Representative Finke, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Representative Fisher, aye. Representative Gilman.
No.
Representative Gilman, no. Representative Jacob.
No.
Representative Jacob, no. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lee, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, no.
Representative Lislegard, no. Representative Purcell.
Aye.
Representative Purcell, aye. Representative Scraba.
Scraba, no.
Representative Scraba, no. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Mr. Chair, the ayes are 9, the nays are 7.
The motion passes. Congratulations. And with that, we are adjourned.